Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And if I'm not loud enough in your headphones, there's a knob right over there underneath your thing.
What?
All righty, folks. For the next 2 hours, we're going to start the hour off by telling stories. Because this is the time of joy, time of stories, time of sharing. So we're going to do two of the three. we're going to talk about stories, Christmas stories, funny stories. We're going to start off with something good. But before I do this.
Which one of the three aren't we doing?
We're not doing time of joy.
Oh, no, no, no. The cone story gives me much joy.
okay. Fair enough. We're going to do joy, stories, and sharing. Sitting to my right is my son, Alan Salem. Sitting to my left is Jeff Trapp, a retired highway patrolman.
Howdy.
His traffic has traveled every state highway in the state of Arizona.
Correct.
Every single one. And initially was assigned to, what was it, Technos Post?
No, that was my fear.
Yeah, well,
Technos Post. Yeah.
Technos Post up in the Navajo Indian Reservation.
Yes, yes.
Where was the most remote place you were assigned?
Camp Verde.
Camp Verde. Yeah. They're going to love that.
Yeah. Camp Verde in those days was remote.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. All righty. Well, I want to say happy birthday, my grandson, Rex. Now, he is one of my grandsons that wears the Salem name very proudly. He also, when he puts his baseball hat, he has a couple of bumps in the back of his head. And I'm not quite sure he got those from me, but they are something that does happen in our family.
Yeah, you need to dehorn him early on.
Yeah. We call him the bowling ball with arms. Affectionately. He gets that from his mom, though.
Oh, God. We're not going to have... We're going to have to lock the shop down just to keep everybody away from us that's mad at us. You've already opened the door.
Yeah.
How old is Rex going to be? 7?
Rex is 8 today.
8 today.
Yeah.
Okay. He's 8 years old. He's a handsome boy. Doesn't quite know anything about girls yet, I don't think.
No. Good boy, though. Good boy. We love you, Rex, and hope you have a good birthday.
Yeah. And so we're going to have a party at his place tonight.
Yeah.
And then we'll have Christmas again tomorrow, so he gets a kind of a double whammy. Christmas Eve baby.
Nice.
Yeah, that was it. But he's a good kid. Now, his older brother, Mark, who I don't really know very well, Mark is just the opposite of Rex in every way, shape, or form. Mark is a motherly kind of figure and stuff like that. Rex is punch in the nose.
Rex is a bowling ball with arms, Mark is a stick figure. I mean,
unlike his grandpa.
Yeah, he gets that part from me.
Yeah.
Polar opposites. And then of course there's Lexi, and she is the stereotypical most sassy, prissy, blonde little girl you have ever met.
Oh,
just take the worst one you've ever seen and multiply it by 9,000, and that's her.
Poke you in the eyes. Poke you in the eyes. All right. Listen, 602-508-0960. We're not talking about cars just yet, but I did want to start the show off with a story and sharing. And we have to talk in words that draw pictures for people because we don't have the benefit of visual things here. So we're going to start it up by saying one day, many moons ago, you're driving your highway patrol car.
No, motorcycle.
Oh, you're on your motorcycle. So you have your britches on, right?
We call them breeches.
Oh, well, they're not. They're britches. And they have a crotch of leather, don't they, or something like that?
Well, they're like 8 levels or 8 layers of wool around the seat and in the crotch and then down in the knees.
Okay. So did you really stay warm in the wintertime, or did you just freeze your butt off?
No, you froze your butt off.
Okay. So it's safe to say on the really cold days, you're probably not going to get surprised by a motor behind a pillar on the freeway.
Well, unless he's wrapped in a blanket,
you
might see.
Incognito?
Yeah.
All right. So
trying to keep warm.
Is this a summer day or a winter day?
No. The men out there will understand that on a summer day, things occur in a man's body.
Okay. So you're out there on the freeways, and you're looking for evil. And there's an accident, and you're going.
I'm just minding my own business driving down the road.
Okay.
The Phoenix people in the East Valley, they understand the transition. That's an area of 360 and 10. You're coming west on 360, which is now 60.
Yeah.
And you get onto 10, and there's, like, Y lanes, and there's barriers, and there's protectors and cones and stuff like that to keep the traffic split.
Now, and this is the superstition freeway for those old guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, real quick, when I started, that highway went to mill and stopped.
I remember that.
That was it.
I remember that. I remember when they took the houses out and they built this big ditch.
Yeah.
And everybody was wondering, how many shovelfuls is that?
It was a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's westbound on, if you're going westbound on the 60, the 360, the
Superstition,
yeah. And you're going to go to Tucson.
Well, that'd be eastbound. No, that'd be westbound.
Yeah, you're westbound.
But this was the area that went off into Phoenix.
Okay.
And it was completely different back then than it is now. Like today, they have those traffic things that go for a half mile, and they keep the lanes separated. In these days, it was just a couple of little of those separators, and then suddenly you were there and you're heading to Phoenix.
Okay.
And, of course, this is the summer of 88. This goes back a ways.
All right. Then there's a Gore Point. And the Gore Point is where we split traffic. It's a triangle.
Right.
And where we split traffic. So some of the people are going to go right towards Phoenix. Some of the people are going to go left towards Tucson. So that's
right.
Gore Point. Now, the Gore Point is, there's an accident.
Yeah, I'm sent to the call down there to investigate the accident. And I'm sitting in that Gore area well past the tip of it because it's really dangerous out there. I had a friend killed in a Gore Point. But the cars are all out there. It's a minor crash. Somebody decided at the last minute they wanted to cross over and go the way that the other guy was going. And usually it's someone that is in a hurry, you know. So,
yeah.
So it's a minor crash.
Okay.
And I'm filling out the paperwork and everything is fine. And then suddenly I don't hear traffic because I'm used to hearing traffic.
Okay.
And I look up and my eyes meet this woman who is stopped in the middle of the high-speed lane of the Superstition,
okay.
Frozen in fear, her car is broken down.
And her eyes are as big as saucers.
Absolutely.
And how old is this nice lady?
She's certainly younger than me and you.
Okay. Today.
30s. Yeah, she's probably as old as I am now.
Okay.
But, yeah, she's out there. Car's stopped, dead in the water.
Okay.
So, you know, you got to make sure the accident doesn't get any worse than it is. That's the first thing to teach you.
So then you hear
you. I'm blowing my own bugle. And back in those days, people kind of respected the cops when they put their hand out to stop. Everyone stopped. You didn't need a whistle. You didn't need barricades, flares, cones, all that other stuff. So I just put my hand up, you know, like, hey, you stop. You stop. Traffic comes to a halt, complete halt.
Okay.
And I run up to her and I said, ma'am, don't be afraid, because I am here to help you. We are going to get you safely off the road. See that area up there where those other cars and my motorcycle are? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to push your car off into that area. I'm going to call you a tow truck, and everything will be fine. Okay. Now, remember, put your car in neutral, turn your key on. You won't have power steering, you won't have power brakes, but I will be able to, since I am a gigantic motor officer, I will be able to hand push your car off of the freeway, out of the danger, and place you into the safety of the surrounding traffic cones and other vehicles. Okay.
Okay.
Now, look straight ahead, ma'am. You'll see those little delineators or traffic cones or things, those rubber thingies that you see sticking up. They're not going to hurt your car. They're on a bungee cord. They will bend over, and you can just drive right over them. Don't worry about trying to go around them.
So these are those orange things or white things that they're like PVC pipe. They're a piece of pipe that comes out of the ground. They have like a black base on them.
They're like a slightly rubbery PVC.
Okay. Yeah. And so they're 3 or 4 feet tall. That's
right.
About it.
Right.
3 foot tall because they're not 4 feet tall. Yeah. And so basically they're just, and you call them delineators.
Nah, they're not. I can't remember what they're called. They have a specific traffic safety name, but they're not cones, like cones you can throw and knock over that you see.
Right.
Orange cones.
These are spring-loaded pieces of pipe.
Of pipe. I think that's the proper name.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, so I say, okay, let's go, and we're pushing. Now, to get good torque when you're pushing, you know, you kind of look like that football player pushing that pushing dummy.
Sled.
The sled.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've got my legs spread, and I'm really shouldered into that thing. I've got my hands on the trunk, and I'm pushing that car, and we are moving in. Boy, it is like a sight to behold. It's wonderful.
Because, and as your arms straight out on the trunk and your feet are back, and so your body's kind of straight at a 45-degree angle?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, you're a real hero position there.
Yes, Your Honor, I am.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. So she heads right for those things, and she goes over them, and next thing I know, I look down onto the pavement, and I see one of those things. I see the base of it, basically, and I don't – it's bent over.
Yes.
And she clears it, but it doesn't clear me. I hear flang, thunk, thunk. And she continues on because she's got momentum. She continues on, parks her car over there. And I am like, there's some pain.
You know,
it's in the pit of your stomach. It's in your head. It's on the tips of your toes, your fingers.
So you're laid out. Your hands are straight. You're pushing on the trunk. And then all of a sudden, you see at the bottom of her bumper the beginning of this pipe that's bent over.
Yeah.
And so as you push it forward, and as that pipe drags along the bottom of the car, then once it clears the rear bumper, it straightens up.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
And this all happened...
in a
way too fast.
Yeah. Before I could say, no. It gets me. It rings my chimes, to use the vernacular. And I go up to her and I say, okay, ma'am, everything's going to be fine. We're going to call your tow truck. Excuse me, I'll be right back.
Now, at this particular point, you get hit by the pipe in the breeches.
In the breeches, yeah. Right smack dab, both breeches. It got me.
Did you go home, or did you weather the storm and continue your shift?
As a motor cop, you don't go home because of something like that. You go home if it rains, because you don't want to get your motorcycle wet. But no, I weathered the storm. We finished the wreck. She got her tow truck. Everything was fine. I think you were running a tow service at that time, so I may have even called you.
Oh, God almighty. So there you learned an important lesson there.
No, I didn't. But go ahead.
You never pushed another car over a delineator.
No. And at our annual meeting with the big boss, everyone got awards for doing a great job. I got a delineator or one of those plastic things.
Yeah.
That's what he awarded me.
Did you seek medical treatment?
No. How could you?
Did you have children after that?
Yeah, I did.
Excuse me. I can't stand it. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. They've been around since 1970. They do light truck repair maintenance services. They have customers that have been with them 30, 40, and 50 years. Their ASC certified technicians are there to provide you with really the highest level of automotive service. So Brian and Thelma, who make up Thompson's Auto Repair, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and they're a good shop to go to. When we come back, we may or may not have another story, but if we do, I don't know if we can beat that one. I'll tell you what. 17 minutes after the hour, I'm Mark Salem. We'll be back right after this.
The mechanic raised up from under
my hood. Well, the mechanic raised up underneath my hood. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by a really good friend of mine, Kurt. Kurt owns Kurt's Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell. Been around since 1987. He has ASC Master Technicians. He's got a young man working in the shop named Eric, who's probably one of the greatest technicians I've ever met. He certainly is in the top 10% of all the technicians I've ever met. And he's really, really good. He's got a great service writer. I wish I could remember his name, but I don't. But Kurtz is on I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. Been around a long time. And one of the things about Kurtz, it's truly a family operation to this extent. If you do business with Kurt and you're a first-time customer, sometime in the following couple of weeks, Kurt's wife will stop by your house, knock on your door, and bring you some homemade baked goods. They're just saying thank you for trusting them to work on your car. So if you live anywhere near I-17 and Bell and you don't have a repair shop already, may I suggest Kurt's Auto Repair, I-17 Bell, northeast corner. We've got Jeff Trapp here. He's a former law enforcement officer for the State Highway Patrol.
Howdy.
And what they call those troopers? You guys was troopers?
No, we were just plain old ordinary highway patrolmen.
Really?
That trooper thing came up after I was retired.
Okay. All right. So did they have any other names that we can repeat on a Christian station that they called you?
Well, DPS officers.
Oh, DPS officer. Yeah. Dipstick is what I always thought it meant.
Yeah, thanks. DPX,
dipstick officers.
Well, there was dips, and then there was chips.
Oh, that's right. That's a California thing.
So chips and dips was that area over in Yuma where they both worked at the same time.
At the same time?
Chips and dips.
So, but you rode motors. The Highway Patrol only has motors in Phoenix and Tucson?
I think they have resident motors in some of the smaller towns that ride part-time.
Okay.
Up on the rim. But I'm not sure. I've been out of it for a while.
Was that the best part of your 20-some-odd-year career, 30-year-odd career was motors?
It was the best and it was the worst, but I can say that about every assignment I ever had.
Okay. Well, what was the worst about riding a motor? In the summer? Was it
summer.
Oh,
122.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was the last week that I rode. My wife said, I'm too old, too fat, and too slow to ride a motor anymore.
Yeah.
And I agreed.
Yeah.
Because it was hot.
And was that worse than the cold, the biting cold?
Yeah, you could always dress for the cold. You know, you put on pantyhose and nylons and stuff like that.
So there was a lot of cross-dressers during your time.
Yes, but they were all underneath those breeches, so you didn't know what they were wearing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Some guys wore fishnet, and I don't know why. That just didn't keep you warm. And I never wore pantyhose. I wore silk long underwear, which I guess is pantyhose if you think about it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, where'd you buy those? You certainly didn't buy them from John's Uniform at the
men's
shop.
Oh, you had to buy them online.
That's where Alan gets his came out of his clothes is online.
Plain brown wrapper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, you and I were, I don't know, who had the first female policeman? Was it Scottsdale or was it Phoenix?
Well, if you go back into the 20s and 30s, they always had females, but they were like matrons, and they didn't really do on-the-road type of work.
Now, Lillian Shaheen had
a
gun and a badge, and she was with Scottsdale.
Right. But she started with the Sheriff's Department back, in the 50s, I think.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay. So she was the first female I ever met.
Maybe it was Phoenix.
Okay.
So, yeah, me too. She was standing in the doorway at the old station on Main Street, and she said, just what in the hell do you want, hon? I was trying to get into the door to work in the radio room.
She was intimidating.
Yeah, she was.
And she was Lebanese, so she's part of my historical background. And she just, she was a nice woman. So you and I actually were in the arena where we had Scottsdale hired lots of female officers in the early 70s.
Right, and I had a squad where I was the only guy. There was three ladies, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize for my 60-year-old.
Women.
Women's.
Uh-huh.
I apologize for that to all the listeners out there who may be of the female persuasion.
Yeah.
There were women officers. That was my squad. You remember back in those days we had team policing, and they all had individual beats, and I was the at-large car for day shift. It was all gals.
I'll tell you a story that I remember. I remember one time I was at Bob's Big Boy on Scottsdale and McDowell eating a burger or something.
I think I was in Bob's Big Boy all the time.
Yeah. And I think I was the 30 car. I was in that large car. You were too.
Yeah.
But I had come down from Team 2 to probably wait for you. And two of the ladies end up going over on Moreland Street and Miller. And it was somewhere around Moreland and Miller to a family fight.
Nice neighborhood.
And then they went in. It ended up in the backyard, and then they called for help. And then we heard, and here you go. You're blazing over there, and I leave my burger and leave, and I'm heading over there with you. You are twice as tall as I am, twice as wide as I am. I weigh 120 pounds, sopping wet. As a matter of fact, all my stuff I'm carrying weighs almost as much as I do. So we get there, and the girls have been abused. They've been hit on a lot, but there's lots of guys there. But there's two of them in the backyard, and they're standing there like, come get me, come and get me. I remember that we're calling for medical assistance for the ladies. I know that you walked through the gate, and I noticed, for whatever reason, you latched the gate behind you. and then before you went in there, you put your gloves on. So you walk through
my gravity operated gloves.
No. So you walk through the thing, and I notice you shut the door, and I think, okay, well, he's just going to kind of corral them until the rest of the troops get here. So the girls, I get them out front, the ladies, I get them out front, and we got medical attention. We got RFD sitting there helping them out. And then all of a sudden, you walk through the gate, And I said, I got help coming. And you said, well, we don't need help. And so you and I walked back to the gate, and both of them were face down, handcuffed. And I don't know to this day how you did that. But it was a feat that I don't know that I ever saw anyone accomplish.
He told them that story about getting hit in the jewels. Cracking up.
Well, for the purposes of federal prosecution, I don't remember that.
The statute of limitations is over.
Oh, that's right. I'm retired.
Yeah. It was a good thing. It was a good thing. Somehow or another, you overpowered both of them, and you handcuffed both of them, and they really were in no position to fight when your hands are behind your back.
2 minutes.
They saw this crazy 120-pound officer behind me, and they said, that guy's crazy. And we surrender. Yeah.
Those were the good old days, though, weren't they?
The good old days, yeah.
And you know, something people don't recognize, that from Indian Bend to Carefree, from 56th Street to Fountain Hills, was one guy's beat.
Yeah, I worked that.
And I did, too. Yeah. I love that beat.
Yeah. Brand new.
One guy. Now, what is it from Indian Bend to Carefree? 20 miles?
Easily.
And then from 56th Street to what, 144th Street? 10 miles?
Yeah, but there wasn't anything.
No, you're right. There was Mag's Ham Bun, the Chevron station, the mobile station.
And the Tasty Freeze, and Drinkwater's Liquor.
And Drinkwater's Liquor.
And I could go a full day with no calls.
Up there north.
Yeah.
Up north. And the fun we used to have is on Sunday morning, we'd do our radar. We would do our speedometer calibrations out on Shea Boulevard. Right?
How fast can this car go?
That wasn't the way it was supposed to be. The way it was supposed to be is we'd do 10 miles an hour, and the radar unit would say, you're doing 9.
Uh-huh.
And then we'd do 20, we'd do 30, we'd do 40. You remember this.
Yeah, cars will do 120, too.
Well, and they were Dodges with big 440s.
Yeah.
But there was guys like you that would blow through the time zone, the guy with the radar, and the rest of us would hear on Channel 2, you're beginning 80, 90. On a Sunday morning, we were the only ones there.
Yeah,
nobody else to do it. So when we come back, we're going to talk about our affection for the Scottsdale Airport.
Okay.
The Scottsdale Airport. It was something that we protected a lot. And Fred Todd was there. He protected it as well. And so when we come back, we're going to talk about how we hung out there together to protect the airplanes and protect all the aircraft that were at the Scottsdale Airpark back in the 70s.
Never got stolen up there.
And nothing ever got stolen up there. That was certainly something that we could all be proud of. Okay, so when we come back, we're going to talk about the Scottsdale Airpark in 1970. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. Mark Salem here. This is the time of joy, time of stories, and time of sharing. We got Jeff Trapp here. Jeff and I go back to the early 70s together. We started at the Scottsdale Police Department at the early 70s. I left in 79. You went to the Highway Patrol in
79.
79 as well. There was a lot of guys that left in 70. 78, 79.
Gee, I wonder why.
I don't know. Gordy left. George left. Yeah. I mean, when they gutted the SE Special Enforcement Unit, everybody pretty much left and went someplace else. So this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by IMM Auto Service. IMM has been in business since 1972. They work on all kinds of cars. And this is one of those shops that if you have two diametrically different cars in your garage, say you have a Fiat and a Chevrolet, or if you have a Saab and a Ford, two cars that are just completely different kind of cars, IMM is your shop, and I'll tell you why. IMM works on domestic cars and most imports, but they specialize in the cars that make the rest of us just shake. Swedish cars, Italian cars, Asian vehicles, and I'll give you some examples of those cars, Jeffrey. Volvo, Saab, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo.
My Volvo.
Yeah, your Volvo. Yeah. Your Colombo Volvo.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what, but these guys can do both. And that's kind of nice to have one shop that can do both, because many of us don't want anything to do with Volvos, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos, and especially Saabs. But IMM does. They're in the northeast corner of Tempe. They're just south of the 202, just west of the 101. Been around a long time, and David Enriquez owns it, and I've known him since the late 90s. He's a good guy. Okay, we're going to continue our reminiscing when we became policemen in the 1970s. And I think back then, the team policing had just come out, so they had divided Scottsdale into three teams. There was a south team, a middle team, and a north team. And the fun was down in the south team.
Absolutely, because we were there.
Yeah.
And by the way, Colombo drove a Peugeot 143.
Did he really?
Yeah, not a Volvo.
Oh, okay.
So right. Don't ever besmirch my Volvo again.
Okay, I won't besmirch it. You did. So down in Team 1, one of my favorite sergeants was Tom Clark.
Absolutely.
And Tom Clark, there was a couple things. I'll tell you a story, then you tell me a story. Tom Clark on Sunday morning you never called, and he was 1L40.
What L40?
One meant that it was team one, and then L means you're a lone car, and one, what was two car, two men car?
A, like one Adam 12.
Oh, that's one Adam 12.
Yeah.
And the beats were 1, 2, and 3. So 1L1, 1L2, 1L3, and then 1L40. And then at large cars were 1L30s. So they kind of roamed the whole section. Every Sunday morning, you'd see Sergeant Clark driving around in his police car with lawn furniture and stuff like that hanging out of the windows and the doors.
Yes.
Because he would go garage sailing on Sunday morning.
Yes.
In Team 3.
Well, that was team policing at its best because you wanted to get out and interact with the citizens.
Oh, he did the best job in the world.
He interacted with the citizens.
And you'd laugh. You'd see this. You'd call the Sarge, and he'd say, "Rob, brother, now give us an example of that radio transmission."
Well, this is not a garage sale story, but okay. This is a typical Tom Clark story.
Okay, all right.
I was 1L32.
Okay.
So it was 1L40, 1L32.
Okay, that's 1L40 to 1L32. He's calling you.
Right, and he had a little bit of a mumble type thing.
But
right. 1L40, 1L32. Go ahead, sir. Maybe it's Scott Dillon Thomas.
Okay.
Okay. Frontier Town or something like that. Right. So I drive up and you say, "Arrest this guy." Okay. Can you give me just a little background so I can make a legal arrest? Well, he did this.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sir, you're under arrest for theft or
whatever.
Yeah.
2 minutes.
He was a Lone Ranger on his horse.
He was the best cop I ever knew. Seriously.
Right.
And he was always there when the call came out. Like, you'd get the hot tone would go off on the radio. They'd say emergency traffic, and you'd hear 1040-106, which means he was there.
Right.
He's like, how did he know something bad was going to happen at this location?
Yeah, and 10-6 means I'm there.
I'm
10-6,
there.
I'm there. 10-8 means I'm in service. I'm done with my stuff.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I remember about him was let's say that you're at a big party with booze or that there's a rambunctious desert party or something like that. He was always really nice to people, but when he started calling you neighbor, then everybody knew the fight was just around the corner.
Time to put on your gloves.
Exactly. Time to get your baton out,
yep.
And time to put your gloves on, because he was going to try to arrest somebody, and it was going to start a fight.
Absolutely.
And so when he started neighboring people,
yeah, it's like, hey, guys.
1 minute.
Sergeant Clark just started calling people neighbors. Oh, boy.
It was kind of like team one to team two, start moving this way because we're going to need some help.
Yeah. How many parties did we have where they actually had to call in the whole city to respond?
Oh, I can tell you, I worked undercover, and we were up at Pima and Bell, just at the power lines up there, and we had a party with what some people estimated at 400 or 500 kids.
Yes, the Boondockers.
The Boondockers. Yeah. And they were from 14 to 16, 17 years old, with some older people that shouldn't have been there at the very beginning. And when when they started throwing rocks, we called people from McDowell to Bell and
the whole
and
city.
Pima.
The whole city would
went
respond.
There. Yeah. And there was only one way in and one way out, which was Pima, which was the dirt road.
Right.
And the dirt would get so bad, the dust would get so bad, as the policemen are running in and the kids are running out. and we're in there trying to buy drugs from everybody, and we can't even see one another because the dust is so bad. So, all right, when we come back, we'll talk more about the old days in Scottsdale. And I forgot about the airport story. Hey, everybody, welcome back. Mark Salem, Jeff Trapp, Alan Salem sitting here, and we're just reminiscing. This is a time of joy, time of stories, and we're sharing stories with them. About 45 years ago, when we first became policemen, how old were you when they pinned the badge on you?
20.
I was 19. I couldn't even buy my own beer.
You couldn't even shave.
I couldn't even. I didn't shave.
Yeah.
I didn't. I was a three-whiskered kid. And they pinned a badge on you, and they said, oh, then they yanked me out before my probation and put me in narcotics because they said, you probably know more about drugs than we did.
Go forth and prosper.
And I went to Coronado High School, Scottsdale High School, Chaparral High School, and what? Gold Dust? What's the one up on Gold Dust?
I don't remember. Sorry.
All right. Chaparral. Well, that's Chaparral. Saguaro. Coronado, Scottsdale, Saguaro, and Chaparral.
Right.
And they, I enrolled in high school there. And I,
how'd you do, by the way?
I failed.
Class-wise. Was it spelling?
No, I just really had a tough time. My job was to go to class, but then roam the alleys around those high schools during the breaks. during lunch and stuff like that, and just do whatever you could do. But I looked like I was 10 anyway.
You did.
So I did. There was no question about that. Okay, so we're going to continue reminiscing about it. I'm going to tell you about the Scottsdale Airport. When I used to work Team 3 way north, keep in mind, we had those 440 Dodges that were just monster cars.
They wouldn't stop in a straight line, and they couldn't steer, but they could go pretty fast.
Oh, they could go fast. There was very few people that could outrun you. I mean, you didn't. Right. And especially working up on the north side of town, you had Shea Boulevard, and you had all those boaters heading east and west. And it wasn't the guys with the trailers that you had to worry about. It was everybody else who was passing them.
Right.
So we'd go to the airport in the middle of the night, and we'd drag race our police cars.
Why
to
not?
See whose car was the fastest.
It's training.
It was part of driver's training. Yeah. That's what the sergeant said. We're not going to tell you who what his name was. I think it was Jerry Mix.
What?
we did have a lot of fun up there.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, back then, what did you do on Saturday and Sunday morning after you got to work at briefing and you were on the road by 6? So what was 6 to 7, 6 to 8 on a Saturday, Sunday morning?
Well, you had to meet and discuss crime trends with your fellow officers.
Uh-huh. And what did that look like?
Well, it was usually 3 or 4 cars parked kind of like in a circle behind a shopping center with coffee cups up on the dash and little donuts.
Box of donuts.
And a newspaper. And you'd read you'd discuss crime trends until the first call came out, and then you'd split up. And usually the first call was because someone came in and found grandma dead, but they went to wake her, stuff like that on the Sunday morning.
Yeah, there was a lot of older people that had passed away on Saturday and Sunday morning. But now you're in this group of 3 or 4 cop cars, okay?
Right.
And somebody's just got done with a sugar donut, okay? So their mouth has got sugar on it, and their shirt's got sugar on it.
Got a sticky steering wheel.
Exactly. And stuff. Did you say to him, you need to wipe your mouth off?
Oh, heck no. It's like going into the locker room, and when a guy hangs the stuff up to go, and then goes shines his shoes, you take his badge, you hang his badge upside down, you hang his name tag upside down on his shirt,
all
he goes to work with an upside down badge.
We had an Englishman, Nigel.
Yeah.
Nigel, what a great person he is today.
Still,
he is today. He took so much grief. As he opened his locker, he had a full size picture of the Queen. Right.
Yes.
And he this was serious business for him.
Yes.
And the guys would draw brassieres on the Queen with the magic markers. They would put a mustache on her.
Now, remember, he was also a U.S. Marine.
Okay.
And he lived about 2 or 3 miles away from the station. He would run to work every day with a backpack filled with weights to stay in shape. The guy was a monster.
Today's the
still,
same way.
Still. And he'd get into the shower, because we had a men's locker room that you could dress at, and get that hot water going to get his muscles, and people would go and run all the faucets and flush all the toilets so he'd get a dose of cold water every time. It would lower the water pressure and threw off the balance, and you'd hear him scream in his English accent, "Oh, bloody hell, you!" And then he'd say something terrible.
Exactly, exactly.
It was fun.
And then we had Dennis, who blew off the end of his finger in the locker room.
True.
Yeah, yeah. His gun got away from him. There's always a great story when there was an unexplained or unintentional discharge of a weapon.
Yes.
And then we had Major Mike.
Major Mike, yeah. Came to Scottsdale back in the 60s, like 67, 68. Had retired from New York PD and came to Scottsdale. He retired as a lieutenant, came as a lieutenant.
Okay, and let's emphasize that he's from New York.
Absolutely from New York. Yeah.
So
1,000 stories to tell about him. But we'll jump ahead to when, because I was just a kid in 67. But he would... He would always make sure that the officers were okay. If we had an incident and someone got hurt, he would go to the hospital and ask, I don't care about the suspect. What's the condition of the officer?
Right.
Yeah. So
that was his first concern.
First concern.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I remember he came into briefing one day, and there had been a couple incidents where there had been fights. And this is 1973, because I was a policeman then. He walks in, and everyone, Captain Mike at that time, you absolutely always respected him because he was a great guy. Lads.
He always called everybody lads.
It's come to my attention that some of you are getting a little injured. And I think it's perhaps you're a little concerned about being prosecuted by the feds for fighting back. And there's nothing that says you can't fight back if someone attacks you.
So it shall be from this day forward that anyone who attacks a Scottsdale police officer will be booked to the emergency room. And he gets up and he walks out. And we all went like, did he just say, no, he didn't. But what did he mean? Just shut up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And he's talking to a bunch of kids that are 19 to 25 years old.
In the best shapes of our lives, but we had not been policemen very long. And there were a couple of the old-timers in there, like a Tommy Starr kind of guy.
Oh, God, Tommy Starr. Who didn't know Tommy Starr?
Everyone knew Tommy
Starr. Everybody knew. Yeah. I mean, that was the first thing you did. You'd stop a guy, and he'd say, do you know Tommy Starr? And that was an introduction to, yes, I know Tommy Starr. Well, I'm one of his best friends, or I snitched for him one time, or I did this, or I did that. Let me tell you my Tommy Starr story. Down in Team 1, we're having a meeting. So Team 1 is having a meeting, so all the police cars are at the Vista del Camino at the Indians Social Center.
Right, our little team office.
Team office, right. And out in front of Vista del Camino, there's a bunch of parking spots, and there's a bunch of them that are marked handicapped. Okay? So the meeting starts at, I don't know, 2 o'clock. Well, maybe it was an afternoon meeting or whatever, but it started kind of early. So there's like 6-7 police cars there, and the police cars are parked all over. So we have a meeting inside. Tommy gets mad in the meeting, and that's his beat. The Vista del Camino is his beat. So he gets mad because things aren't going his way. Tommy had a bad habit of that. Even though he was a patrolman, he thought he was something else. So he excuses himself from a meeting, and he goes out, and he writes parking tickets on for and he puts them on the windshield of every police car in those handicapped parking spots. Now, this was like Saturday or Sunday morning when nobody was there. Anyway, Vista del Camino wasn't even open. It was closed.
Right.
So he writes everybody parking tickets, and then they have to figure out how to unwind the parking tickets, because you'll remember, we never tore up parking tickets.
Oh, no.
Never.
That was great money for the city.
we had to write 10, 15 pages of supplement if we were going to void a parking ticket. They wanted to know why you were voiding a parking ticket. So he wrote everybody. So we walk outside, and everybody's got a doggone ticket, and it's signed by Tom Starr. So he was not a popular guy. If he would have called for help, it might have been a week before somebody came to help him.
There was a detective that went to the Phoenix police parking lot driving his old Mercury. Remember the Mercuries that we had as detective cars? That Mercury was the same color as Major Mike, his car. And the detective got a parking ticket from Phoenix because they parked in the police parking lot with this obvious police car. So one day he's got this thing he's carrying around on his dash, and he sees the major's car, and he takes the parking ticket and he sticks it on the major's car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not funny.
Yeah, yeah.
It was funny. It wasn't funny to that detective because he had to pay that parking ticket.
Well, and then there was the coffee issue. Do you remember that? Because you were kind of close to that.
You mean the McDonald's hot coffee issue?
Yes.
Yeah, if you think the McDonald's hot coffee issue started with that old lady that sued and won, actually, we go back to about 1974 or 5, where there was an officer watching a traffic light in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning. The officer has the coffee cup on the dash of the hot rod police car. A red light violation is seen. The car is jammed into drive, accelerates, the coffee spills.
To Mach 4.
To Mach 4. Like you said, tires start smoking, and that coffee plops right into that officer's lap, and the officer...
The screams could be screams heard to Team 3.
Turns on the siren and the red lights and runs what we call Code 3, red lights and siren, all the way to the emergency room.
At SMH.
At SMH, Scottsdale Osborne Hospital.
Yeah. And then everybody is a real closely kept secret why she's there, or he's there, or the officer's there.
Is there.
Yeah. And no one wants to talk about it.
No,
don't. And if you know, you're sworn to secrecy.
Everything's okay.
That's
all right.
Second degree burns, or third degree burns, or whatever.
Whatever degree, they were horrible. Yeah, that's a sad story. Terrible story.
There was no secrets.
No secrets.
There was no secrets.
You could keep a secret for about a minute.
And then I'll tell you one other thing. There was an officer once, and he had probably the best line I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, no.
This is during a traffic stop.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So he's sitting there writing someone his ticket. Now, you and I both know that people think we're psychiatrists, so they want to vent to us. So they want to talk to us, and sometimes they talk about our mothers and our fathers and our sisters and our brothers and our wives and our boyfriends and girlfriends and all that stuff. So this guy, he's sitting there writing, and he writes one ticket, and there's the mouth is still moving. And he says to the perpetrator, he says, "What you know him as well. Hey. What did he say?
Hey." And the guy stops for a second and says, "Your mouth is connected to my pen. The more you talk, the more I write." And he went on to become a high-ranking and very, very respected command officer at chief of police in two other locations.
And I'll tell you what he told me not too long ago. He said, back then, if you wrote one violation, you had to fill out the whole violation. So it was one ticket, and you had a lot of writing to do.
Yeah.
Today, they have forms where you can put, what, 3, 4, 5, 6?
Yeah, just check a box and write in the code. You don't have to write the guy's name or anything.
You write one time.
Right.
One time his name. So he would walk around the car. I remember the one ticket I saw him write that I thought was unbelievable was no high beam indicator.
Yeah. It's a violation. It's in the big book of laws.
Yeah, 28-something.
Yeah.
So high beam indicator. So he turned on the high beams, and there was no blue light on the dash or red light or whatever it's supposed to have. So he puts on high balloons, and he writes them up for that. But the idea was is shut up, and I'll stop writing, and we'll all go somewhere.
Yeah. And those tickets, they cost money.
The equipment violations did.
He'd write equipment
violations. He'd get his tape measure out, and your headlights were too high.
Your license plate. Lights. Your license plate light. Too many backup lights.
Yep. Yeah. He'd write. The big trucks with long before mudflap issues. The big trucks with headlights way up high.
Too high.
There is a limit of low and high that you can have your headlights.
54 inches or something.
Something like that. Yeah. 54 inches between 54 and 62 or something. Your headlights have to be in that area.
2 minutes.
So 54 is the maximum height is what it is.
I don't remember. It's not important anymore.
No, it isn't. But it was back then.
Yeah.
So nevertheless, all right. In another world.
In another
Larry world. Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. That's an area you may have patrolled. He's a good guy. He's been there since 1967. You got to remember, how old were we then?
I was two.
Yeah, you're a liar. Since 1967. Well, today they're still there. And they do great diagnostic work. They do vehicle emissions, vehicle maintenance. But they're really, really good. And my car does this and nobody can find it. Bob and Ellen, who run Larry Harker's Auto, they're good people. So if you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, or you've got a car that nobody can fix, we call it go wave the proverbial red flag in front of Bob's eyes. Stop by Bob's and say, no one can fix this. I heard maybe you can. But no one else in this city, maybe even in this state, can get it. And Bob will then climb on his horse and go slay your dragon. And sometimes he doesn't do it, and he'll tell you that sometimes I'm not successful. But he's far more successful than just about any shop I know. So again, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. I'm really proud to recommend them. Jeff, thanks for spending your Saturday with me. It's been fun reminiscing. I'm sure that when you on your way home, everyone still has your phone number because you've had it since day one.
Used to be 912.
Yeah. But anyway, thanks a lot. Thanks for your service both at the Scottsdale Police Department for how many years?
Six there.
And the Highway Patrol?
34.
And thank you for both of those services all the time and all the good work that you did. When we come back, we'll talk about cars. I'm Mark Salem, and we'll be back right after this. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Now's the time. If you have a car question, now's the time. We'll be right back.
Can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, if you've got a car question, a car problem, or if you want to do something nice for somebody that with respect to cars, you can call us and we can make some suggestions for you. We know it's kind of late with tomorrow being Christmas, but we're willing to help you. We've had Alan, my son, is sitting next to me. We've had quite a few customers come by and buy gift certificates for their children or for their mother or their father.
Certainly.
Okay, hang on just a minute, and let me turn on your microphone, because you should be number two. Aren't you number two?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're not hearing you. How about now?
Yeah, you there?
Okay, now I got you. Oh, you know what? That's two, three, and you're number four.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. It goes the other way.
Yeah.
We've had a number of customers come by and do that.
I had a guy stop by and buy something for his daughter. And I looked up, and his daughter had like a three-digit serial number or a three-digit number in our customer database. And, folks, the reason why we look at that is to see what kind of – how long have you been doing business with us, and we're up to 38 or 40,000 by now.
Right.
And so I told him I really appreciated that that she had that much faith in us, and he paid us a nice compliment, but he had bought a gift certificate for her. But if you're looking for somebody – and you can do that out of town. You can call – we have people that call us from all over the United States where their kids are going to ASU. And they'll say, hey, I want to buy my daughter or my son a gift certificate. They already do business with you, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And we can make that happen. So other than that, we've got – well, let's talk about Air Park Auto real quick. Air Park Auto is up in Scottsdale. They've been there since 1985. Nadine and Stacy opened up Air Park Auto about the same time that Renee and Mark Salem opened up their shop in Tempe. They're located on Raintree just east of Hayden, and they're still family-owned and operated. But Stacy passed away about 5, 6, 7 years ago. And Nadine has continued to run Air Park Auto. So it's one of the very few repair shops in the state of Arizona that's only run by a woman, who's predominantly run by a woman, whose ultimate boss and decision-making is done solely by a lady and a woman. So if you want to do business with someone like that, then Air Park Auto is a good place to start. They're a state-of-the-art, they're clean and green facility. They have all the latest diagnostic tools and scanners. They service most makes and models of vehicles and small trucks. So if you live in the North Scottsdale area, really they're the only ones that I recommend. I know you'll be happy with your service at Air Park Auto Service in North Scottsdale. Again, on Hayden and Raintree, just east. So tell me, right now you've got a whole bunch of diesels in, and they're pretty much broken. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open. You got a lot of diesels. You had that Dodge in. Was that gas motor Dodge?
Yeah, that was a gas motor.
Gas motor Dodge. And I was surprised to see that it had a bad camshaft in it, which is what we're really finding in other – we're finding in the GM line.
Right. Yeah, it's it was on their 5.7 Hemi there. I guess the lifters lock up and grind down the cam.
Okay. So we used to have a lobe that would run over the lifter, and as the lobe rotated on the lifter – it would push the valve open and close.
Right.
So instead of being a completely round, it had a teardrop to it that pushed the valve open and closed.
Uh-huh.
Now we have roller lifters. And so the roller lifters actually have a spinning wheel on them, and that creates a lot less friction, a lot less wear, and makes the whole motor better.
Right.
But what's happening is they haven't perfected the rotation of that wheel. It's kind of like when we were kids, it's kind of like your front tire on your bicycle. But they haven't really perfected that, so we've got GM problems. And what motors are the GM problems?
The 4.8, 5.3, and 6.2.
Okay, those are the ones that we're doing camshafts on.
Yeah, but I don't know if those are caused by the lifters, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Okay, now that could be caused by the metal makeup of the camshaft.
Correct, that's what they're attributing it to.
Okay, and if that's the case, then you have to pull the front of the engine apart, the top of the engine apart. You have to slide the camshaft out the front, replace the camshaft and all the lifters.
Correct.
And that's going to be spread between, what's the prices? Just give me
probably
as low as
3,000 up to 6,500.
Just depending on what all needs
features
to be
features of the vehicle. Yep, yep.
Okay. So this Dodge, is this the first Dodge we've done with a bad camshaft?
Yeah,
a Hemi?
The first one we've seen, yeah.
Okay, and that was kind of unusual because it follows the same roller cam assembly that Chevrolet has.
Yeah, nearly the same, yes.
And what happens, again, is the lobe on the camshaft ends up rubbing on the lifter because the camshaft moves the lifter moves the pushrod moves the rocker opens and closes the valve.
Right.
So as your motor's running, we have to open and close valves. So this is the drive, this is the valve train, so to speak.
Correct.
So so to give you a better example is the crankshaft, which is the main spinning unit of your motor, turns the camshaft. Then the camshaft pushes on the lifter. The lifter pushes on the pushrod. The pushrod rocks the rocker, and the rocker opens the valve.
Correct.
So that's how it kind of moves around.
Yep.
So what did we do that 5.7 liter for? And this is coolant, oil, filter, labor, all the parts, the diagnosis, everything. What do you remember what the range was on that?
I think with the head work, we ended up doing some head work. It was right around the $5,000 mark.
Okay. And the head work had to do with?
Leaking valve. They have bad valve seats in them. So okay. we send it out and have them all remachined, put new seats and stems and everything in them.
Okay, so we did some valve work. How many miles did that Dodge 5.7 Hemi have on it?
It was a 13. It had 150-some, I think, 157.
Okay. And it wasn't a construction truck or something
that?
It had to do with a company that put lots of miles.
With a lack of maintenance.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But still, with respect to him, his $5,000 hit after 100, call it 130, 150,000 miles,
right.
We see other people spending that kind of money for transmissions.
Sure.
A little less than that for full air conditioning rebuilds.
Right.
For certainly engines. Engines are going to start at about 4,000, go all the way up to 10, 12, 15,000, just depending on the kind of car it is. So, and I've said this before, 99% of the engines that we replace that have been damaged by someone running it low on oil or like driving it well past its overheat time.
The customer's fault.
I affectionately say it's the nut behind the wheel.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the nut
behind
the wheel.
You see very few failures due to actual mechanical stuff.
Well, and actually they're worn out more.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, worn out. They're what's the word I'm looking for? Their lack of maintenance, lack of attention. What's the word I'm looking for?
Well, here's how it kind of starts as far as I think, is the engine gets to the point where it starts consuming oil.
Right.
Because it's old.
Right.
Then it consumes oil, and then it fouls spark plugs. And when you start adding a quart of oil every other gas fill up, then you foul spark plugs, the end is near.
Right.
Everybody knows the end is near. So this engine simply worn out. Now, did it wear out because of miles, or did it wear out because somebody abused it in the past? Those are issues that you can't really deal with. But I did a query not too long ago out of the 186,000 repair orders we did, and it was amazing to me. There was double digits. Out of 100%, we had double digit 200, 300, 400,000 mile vehicles in our fleet that we service. So I think one of them was as little as 10%, and that's probably the 400,000-mile range. And then we had probably 11, 12, 13% of the cars we have are in the 200 and north of that range. We've got quite a few older cars that we're servicing. And I looked back in historical, and I looked for the engine code, our labor engine code, when we swapped the motor out, and I found very few of those in those cars when I built my query. What that tells us is that 200, 300, 400,000 mile cars, they haven't had a motor put in them yet.
Right.
So if you, and you don't have to go overboard.
Right.
You don't have to go overboard. 602-508-0960. I'm going to touch on this subject, and we're going to do this very carefully. We've been interviewing for some staff. And during that interview process, we talked to different people at different shops. And some people from out of town. Now, the other day we talked to somebody from out of town. And during that process, that person told us some pretty amazing things. And I remember you saying to me, you came into my office and you said to me, this was a situation where there was sales requirements and they
quotas.
And was that the word that the prospective employee used?
Yes.
Okay. And he was from kind of north and east of Arizona.
Correct.
So he was at least a state away.
Uh-huh.
And they had quotas. And the quotas had to do with bringing the ticket price up.
Bringing the phone estimate down, but yet the ticket price up.
Okay. And I remember you said to me that initially they had like a $199 brake job.
Correct.
And they dropped it, and they weren't doing as enough brake jobs.
That's what they would quote on the phone.
It was $199.
Mm-hmm. If you called in, they'd tell you.
Is that a full brake job front and rear or just one axle?
Oh, no, one axle, per axle. Yeah.
All right, so $199 per axle.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they weren't getting enough of those. Then what did they do after that?
The most logical thing. They dropped the price.
To?
$139 is what they quoted on the phone.
Okay, so then what happened?
Well, then the customer would come in, and they would say, okay, so you're getting the 139, you get the 139 brake job. We just want to let you know for the 139 brake job, you are getting the cheapest pads on there. They're likely to squeak. They're not likely to last. They're likely to dust. They're likely to chatter. Right here in your invoice, I'm going to write down, brake job, no warranty. Just want to make sure that that's okay with you. Well, no, that's not okay with me. Okay, well, if you want to jump up the pads, you know, the next pads are going to be an additional, you know, $60, or the next thing are going to be, oh, oh, and then your, you know, your rotors are below specs, and it kind of snowballs from there.
And stuff like that. Yep. And he said, we want to move that axle ticket price. So you have a front axle on your car and a rear axle on your car. You got front brakes that are usually disc, and the back are either going to be disc or drum. They wanted to move it from the $139 to the $200-$400 range.
Far north as they could get it.
Okay. And so it was a situation where they were going to sell you, they were going to bring you in on a $139 ticket, but then they would send you out, or the estimate would be, you need brake pads, and we're going to step you up unless you want the worst ones we have, which have no warranty. Then you need two new rotors, and you need two new calipers, and we need to flush your brake system and flush your ABS system, and then that's going to be, you know, $412.
And we'll warranty that.
And that will give you a warranty because you're paying extra for a warranty.
Right.
So it that's not anything that's happened here, but that is something that we didn't hire that person.
Of course not.
But it was interesting to the process that's happening. And I think that one of the questions that you asked that I read about was is you know, what did they think of the car repair industry? And his idea was is that they're making cars so good now that there's not a lot of maintenance that needs to be done, and as a result of that, there's a lot of people pushing on the maintenance area just to keep their boat in the water.
Right, right. They are hardlining the dealer the manufacturer's recommendations, regardless of what the fluid looks like. Is that what you're speaking of?
That too. I remember you saying that. You know, when do you change transmission fluids? No matter what, I'm going to do it at what he said
60.
Well, what happens if the fluid's cherry red and it's not brown and it's not burnt and it's not full of trash or water and it
smells good?
It smells good. And he said,
well, we have to change it anyway. That's what Honda or Nissan or Toyota recommends.
Okay. So no matter what the fluid looks like,
no matter what the fluid looks like, yeah.
And 60 isn't unilaterally across all the Hondas.
No.
Every year is kind of different.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. All righty. 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can. We'll be back right after this. Well, when it comes to stories, I've got another story for you about car repair, and it's one that I was personally involved in, and you're more than welcome to comment if you want to. Let me tell you about, and actually, it's a transmission issue. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in Phoenix since 1968. Phil and his staff are automatic transmission experts. If you drive up and down into Phoenix and you go down Washington Street, at 40th Street, you're going to see Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call it ATE. They're your mic's hitting your beard. There you go.
I heard that too. I didn't know what it was.
You didn't even know it was you. Nevertheless, they've been around for a very long time, 40th Street in Washington. They're open Saturdays from 8 to 12 for your convenience. Phil and his staff are really good at what they do. They do a good job, and they're going to treat you fairly. So if you live in Phoenix or anywhere in the Valley for that matter, and you're close to 40th Street in Washington, they'll drive your car for free. You're welcome to stop by. So you don't even know this. Let me tell you my transmission story.
Okay.
Very few people have my cell phone number. You know that. Mm-hmm. But this friend of mine, Dan, mm-hmm. who I've known since probably, Ahwatukee days, 79, mm-hmm. 79, 80, 81.
37 years.
37 years. Dan actually was one of the guys in Motorola who initially created cell phones and cell towers.
Okay.
He's a really good guy. So he has my phone number. Because uh-huh. we've been friends for all those years. And he calls me up and he says, hey, he says, a friend of mine has her car at this shop and she took it in because she has a noise first thing in the morning. And she took it in and they called her and said that she needed a transmission and it was $3,500.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't really know what to do. And I said, well, Dan, rather than do a three-way kind of conversation here, why don't you just put her in touch with me? And I want to ask her some questions. And he says, well, I'll just bring her in. How do you do that? Three dial, you call her in and
conference call.
Yeah, yeah. Conference call. He said, so I'm going to have her talk. And I said, fine. So we're talking about a Nissan Frontier truck.
Right.
So she gets on the phone and I said, you know, describe the situation. And she says, well, it's just got this kind of a squealing noise or whining noise first thing in the morning. I said, are you in park? She said, yes. I said, when does it go away? And she says, it doesn't last very long. It goes away pretty quick, but intermittently it'll come back and go away. And I said, okay. I said, do you have any other symptoms? And she says, no, just the noise. I said, do you have a check engine light? No, I don't. I said, now what happens if you start it up and put it in reverse? She says, the noise can be there in reverse or in park. And I said, okay. So we have this back and forth. And I say to her, this is what I want you to do.
I want you to call the transmission shop, and I want you to say to them, listen, I just don't have the money, the $3,500, but I'm going to call my dad in Minnesota. And he's going to want a copy of the receipt, and he's going to want you to say on the receipt, you know, that it needs a transmission and how much the bid is and all that kind of stuff, because I'm going to call. We're talking about a lady here who's probably in her 40s.
Okay.
So, and then I want you to bring it by the shop, and I want you to leave it overnight so I can hear the noise the following morning. And I says, meanwhile, and I say to Dan, if you're going to have it at home, this is what I want you to do. I want you to start it up, and if the noise is there, I want you to shut it off immediately. And then I want you to take a garden hose, and I want you to wet all the fan belts with a garden hose. Then start it up and tell me if the noise goes away. And he says, why would I do that? And I said, because I think you might have a bad idler bearing or a bad pulley bearing, or you have a fan belt that's bad, because the truck had 140,000 miles on it. And so if we water down the fan belts, the noise will go away. So he calls me back and he goes, no, the noise was there in park, the noise was there in reverse, and the noise was there after I wet it with the thing. He says, but there was a slight difference in the noise after the water. So she brings the car in, and we did actually find an idler bearing that was bad. Mm-hmm. But we also found that there's these two little shoe pieces, these little plastic pieces. And these plastic pieces are inside of a timing cover. And the hydraulic tensioner pushes up on these little plastic pieces, and the chain rides on the plastic pieces.
Like a guide.
A guide. Yeah. And they chews them up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to back up, though, real quick. She goes to this transmission shop, and she says, you know, I need to borrow money from my dad, so if you just write down, she calls him, tells him that, and write down, and then write down your name and your phone number, so if my dad has any questions, he can call. So she shows up to pick up her car. And she says, you know, do you have a copy of my bill? And he goes, sure do. Well, he's folded it in half and stapled it. So she opens it up, and she says, oh, you forgot to write down what it is. And he goes, well, I told you. And she says, well, I know, but for my dad. He says, no. She says, well, just write down that I need a transmission, and just write your name and your phone number there. So my dad, he wouldn't do it.
Not surprising.
He wouldn't do it. Now, that's the first time I have absolute evidence that that's worked, but I've told people that a million times, is if we're not telling you the truth, if we're taking advantage of you, we will not sign our name and put down our diagnosis in writing and date and time stamp that son of a gun.
Right.
And it actually, so Eddie, our shop foreman, got a hold of it, and he said there's a technical service bulletin, these shoes and the timing, it's got a double overhead cam, so it's got like four chains on it. And he says, these shoes are bad. And he says, and then you can look here. I said, okay. He says, but I do have an idler pulley that's bad. But he says, that's where the water changed it. But he says, there's actually two noises. There's one from these shoes being worn out, these little bitty plastic pieces, and then there's one from this idler bearing. That's why that idler bearing took that noise away, but that's only 10 to 20% of the noise. So I think the repair bill, I don't remember what the repair bill was, but I think it was about $2,000, because the front of the motor had to come apart for these two little plastic pieces that were a buck a piece or $12 a piece or something silly like that. But it was half as much as what the transmission was originally bid at, plus tax and all that other stuff. But that's an important consideration, folks, when you're taking your car in. If you're going to leave there with a diagnosis, or if you've paid for a diagnosis, it's okay to ask them to do that. Any good shop is more than happy to do that, but the guys that are taking advantage of you are not going to do that. In addition to that, from a point of view, we found out that that repair at the dealership is just less than the $3,500. So they maybe have done chains where we didn't. They may have done some other stuff. We actually did a water pump, because we had to take the water pump out, so we did a water pump while we were there. There's no labor charge, just the water pump itself. So there's going to be some differences between us and the dealer. But I'm surprised that that happened. And I'm surprised what that shop was thinking. And
2 minutes.
And were they going to subcontract that to a dealer and have them do a $28, a $25 to $3,000 charge and then turn around and give her the truck back and charge her $3,500 for it? I don't know if that would, but here's the problem. The transmission is going to look the same as it did before. It's not going to be painted. It's not going to be washed. Where we look underneath a car that's had a transmission overhaul, and the transmission is impeccable.
That would have been the interesting part for sure.
Is what it would have looked like afterwards.
Yeah, what would have happened afterwards if they put a new train in and it was still doing it?
Well, yeah.
Or if it wasn't doing it and the train was used.
Well, it could have been used, but I'm sure the transmission would not have fixed the problem. We know
right.
that for sure, but did they know that this was a chain problem, and were they going to subcontract the chain problem and make $1,000 on the turnaround? Otherwise, they sublet it to us. We don't even know what the heck's going on. We do it for $2,300. They've got a bid for $3,500. There's $1,200 left on the table. They pull the transmission out. They wash it with a power washer. They paint it, put it back in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how that works. But in the mechanical business, it happens the same way. Water pumps, alternators, starters, and stuff like that, that happens the same way. So it's just not transmission shops that do that kind of stuff. Everybody in the auto repair industry, there are examples in alignment shops and tire shops and mechanical shops and transmission shops and front end shops and paint and body shops. Is you have to protect yourself. And the reason why this is happening is they're making cars a whole lot better, they need a whole lot less maintenance, and there's a lot of guys starving to death. So when they starve to death, they need to feed their families, and they need to pay rent, and as a result of that, they begin to take advantage of their customers. That's my opinion. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You're welcome to call in. There's five lines available. We'll be back with you in about 2.5 minutes. 602-598-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you certainly can join us. We're going to take Tom real quick. Tom, good morning. Thanks for calling in. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 2005 Toyota 4Runner, and it keeps coming, the check engine light comes on, and when I plug in the meter to figure out what it is, it says misfire on cylinder 4. So I've replaced the spark plug and the coil to cylinder 4. Still comes on, not every time. I mean, well, let me see. If I reset the code, it may not come on for three or four starts or trips, and then it'll come on again.
Okay.
And I read it again, and I've taken it to the dealer. They weren't real sure at first what it was. They were kind of scratching their head, and then they came back with, they think it's the head gasket is leaking.
Okay.
But that sounds like a very expensive repair to me.
Well, let's talk about the head gasket just real quick. If the head gasket is leaking, here are the two predominant symptoms. And you need to learn to ask them this question. What symptoms would I have that would be noticeable to me if the head gasket was bad? And I'll tell you the symptoms. If the head gasket is leaking coolant, intermittently when you start the truck up, it'll run kind of poo-poo-ish, and then all of a sudden it will miraculously clear up and run perfectly. What's happening is when you shut it off, there's 15 pounds of cooling system pressure, and if we've got a leak in a gasket, it will shove some coolant into one of the cylinders. When you go to start the car up, that cylinder's not going to fire till we get all the water out the tailpipe. So it's going to run bad for just a few seconds, maybe 10, 15, 20 seconds, 30 seconds at the most, and then boom, miraculously clear up. Number two, along with that coolant leak will come the fact that you're going to be adding coolant to the reservoir because you're consuming coolant and sending it out the tailpipe as steam. Does any of that happen to you?
The first symptom, when I started up, sometimes it'll start up and it'll be just fine, just perfect.
Okay.
Other times I'll start it up and it'll be a little bit rough for a few seconds, and then it quits.
All right, are you adding any coolant to the overflow, or is the overflow empty?
Nope.
Okay, and I need you to look in your rearview mirror. Which side does the tailpipe come out, the driver's side or the passenger side?
The passenger side.
Then every time you start it, you glue your eyes to that passenger side mirror. And
okay.
I want to know if there's any kind of smoke coming out of that, and if there's white smoke coming out of that, then that will tell you that you got a gas or a fuel or a head gasket leak. Now, you got a couple of choices here. There's some sealers that really do work. Another thing you can do is pull, if they say that you've got a head gasket leak, pull all the spark plugs out, because water will clean up a spark plug, and it will be obviously whiter and cleaner than the other guys. So if you want to compare, if you pull them all out and they're nice and tan, and none of them is whiter and cleaner than the rest, then the head gasket hypothesis goes out the window.
Okay. Now, you only have two choices here. You can let him put a head gasket on for a couple $1,000s, and I would suggest that you not do that, or you wait till it gets worse and easier to find. When it shows a misfire, does it show a specific cylinder, or is it just say misfire?
No, it specifically says cylinder 4.
Okay, I would take cylinder 4 and swap the spark plug to cylinder 2.
2 minutes.
Well, I put a brand new spark plug in there, and I put a brand new coil on that.
Did you put the boot between the coil and the spark plug? The little rubber boot?
Yes.
Okay, so you put a coil and a spark and a boot and a spark plug in number 4.
Right.
Okay, swap the entire assembly with number 2.
Okay.
And if it moves, then you've got a problem in that assembly, the coil, the boot, and the spark plug. If it doesn't move and it stays with number 4, then we need to probably find out if one of the valves needs to be adjusted or if we have a head gasket leak.
Okay.
So that's what I would do if I was working on your car.
Excellent.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet. 602-508-0960. Anybody there, Gil?
Oh, all clear.
All clear. And I want to tell you, Jeff's back here with me, and Jeff and I were talking just a little while ago about reminiscing about our police days. But we have
1 minute.
We have what's the other story?
Just thinking about how times have changed in the cop work.
Let me start it.
Yeah.
Back in 1974-ish.
Correct.
You and your wife Jackie are dating.
Well, we're engaged. We're going to get married.
Okay, and Jackie is a radio
dispatcher.
Dispatcher.
Yeah.
So she's going 1L50, 1L60.
Yeah.
Copy traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you're a patrolman, and you guys are engaged.
Right.
You get called to the chief's office one day.
Well,
this is 1974.
I get called to like a sub chief's office because the chief is on vacation.
Okay, sub chief's office.
Yeah.
And he says,
it's come to my attention that you and Jackie are living together, and you'll either be, Chief's on vacation, you'll either be living someplace else or working someplace else when he returns.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember you telling me that, and I couldn't even believe that happened.
I was devastated, you know, because I always wanted to be a cop, and here I am. I'm going to get fired from my cop job, and, you know, how
because
am I going to support
you were living
my wife?
With Jackie.
And, yeah.
So what'd you do?
We kind of, you know, faked where I was living for a while. I was very
so
careful.
You went and rented another apartment,
yeah.
and so that you'd sneak in the back door.
Well, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
I parked my motorcycle inside the yard and, you know, okay. Stuff like that, and made sure I wasn't getting...
And nothing ever became of that?
Well, no.
Okay. I mean, you got married.
I got married, but I was going to get married anyway.
Right.
Yeah,
but, I mean, they never said anything or set up the SEU unit to find out where Jeff was spending the night.
Well, who knows? I know there were people following me.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. And I found out later they weren't even cops, and they weren't even attached to the police department. They were just friends of people that were attached to the police department.
Okay. Well, I can tell you right now, I was working at SEU in 1974, and our unit was never following
okay,
you because
good.
I'd have told you.
Well, I would have lost you anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. You've dropped. Yeah. No, we would have never followed you. As a matter of fact, in my entire career, we never followed another cop for any reason whatsoever. We were never involved in internal affairs. Never. All righty. So you and Jackie are still married. How many years?
Oh, I've 100.
You better get the number right.
I can't do the math in my head.
Okay, since?
1974.
Same as us.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can't do the math in your head.
No. I have...
It's 42 years.
Thank you. I hope Jackie's not listening.
42 or 43 years.
I know she is.
One of the other.
One of the other.
It's north of 40. You just say north of 40 from this point forward.
I'm almost half a century.
All righty. 602-508-0960. If you want to brag about how many years you've been to you want to tell a story about your wife and how you got, you know, how you got together or something, you can do that. We'll do whatever we can.
Hey, can I ask you a car question later?
Yeah, you sure can.
Okay.
Right after this break.
Right.
Gil's yelling in my ear. So he says, take a break. And so I'm going to just do that. It's 11:42. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. It's 44 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and because we've got callers, we're going to go straight to the callers. Let's start with Tim. Tim, good morning. How can I help you today?
Hey, I've got a 2000 Ford F-150, and it's got a lot of miles, probably a little over 200,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And it was running very well for a long time, and then we had some check engine light problems. We've headed into AAA three different times for them to work on getting the check engine light to go off, and they've tried several different things that worked for maybe a week, but we still get the check engine light, and they cannot figure it out.
Okay. When you talk to a shop about a check engine light, you look them in the eye and you say, I'm not paying for guessing. I'm paying for fixing. So if code 123 is the one you fix and then a little later on 456 comes on, I understand that's different. But I'm not going to pay for guessing. I'm paying for fixing. And here, what's that noise? Tim, is that?
Oh, sorry. It's my turn signal.
No, it's okay. Okay. The issue is that no one knows what the fix is. You need to go someplace else. You need to get it fixed. And then you need to go back to the shop and say to them, all of this work, some of this work, this portion of this work did me no good whatsoever, and so I would like you to make a refund. I would say that if it was my own shop. That's what needs to be done. And people have done that to us. There's sometimes we've raised the white flag and said, hey, we can't fix it. But I'm not going to spend a bunch of your money guessing unless I tell you I'm guessing. A guess sounds like this, Tim. Hey, Tim, you've got a pickup assembly in the distributor that costs installed $100, and it's a real problem with this kind of vehicle. It also causes the same symptoms you have. Tim, I don't know if this is a problem or not, but if you want to gamble $100, I'm saying we've got at least a 50-50 chance of fixing this. You want to do that or not? That's what a guess sounds like. Or
right.
a fix sounds like, I have identified a vacuum leak at the EGR valve that's killing two cylinders. Those two cylinders are exactly the coded cylinders that you have code set. I'm going to fix the vacuum leak. I'm going to clear the computer's memory, and this check engine light will not come on for the next 30 days, and this code will not reappear because I'm going to fix the cause of this code. But I can't tell you there's 4,000 codes in your car, and I can't tell you the light's not going to come on again because it could be something else, but it's not going to be on the two codes I'm fixing, and those two codes will be on your work order. That's what it sounds like. So,
do you have a suggestion on where to take it? I mean, I thought AAA was a pretty reputable place.
You know, my mom used to say to me, probably like your mom did, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything else. So just tell me what part of town you're in.
Bell Road and Cave Creek area, 51 Bell Road.
Okay, I'd go to Kelly Clark's at 40th Street and Bell. 40th Street and Bell, I'd go to Kelly Clark's.
Awesome.
AAA should have stayed with towing and road service. Now they're in the car repair industry. My personal opinion is I think that may have been a mistake because it looks easier than it is, but nevertheless, it's their decision and it's not mine, and getting into the car repair business is a tough thing. So good luck to you, Tim. Thank you very much for calling. David, you're up next. How can I help you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. I got a question.
Okay.
My 79 Jeep truck, it has a Chevy 350 in it.
Okay.
My exhaust is running super hot enough to melt the carpet and melt the speedometer cable and all that stuff.
Okay. Is it fuel injected? Is it fuel injected or carbureted?
Carbureted.
Okay, it's running real rich.
Yeah. I found the problem. It was through the charcoal canister was sucking fuel into that, and for some reason that was causing the issue. I replaced the charcoal canister and it went away. Question is, why did it, or how did it make that work?
We're going to take fumes out of the tank, run them through the charcoal canister, run them back through the carburetor, just fumes, and then burn them again. In your particular case, the purge valve's probably bad on top of the canister, and it was allowing us to suck liquid gas out of the tank, through the canister, into the carburetor, so instead of having one carburetor, you had five.
Yeah, because it's super poor gas mileage.
Yeah, absolutely. Super poor gas mileage, lots of sulfur smell, red-hot exhaust, and all of that adds up to, you know, canister is certainly one of them. So if you've got the exhaust under control and your fuel economy is returning to normal, I congratulate you for finding that.
Yeah, it took a little effort, but I did it.
Well, that's a good job, David. Good luck. Thank you very much, buddy. Thank you. You're exactly right. Steve, you're up next. Steve, how can I help you today?
Hey, good morning. Just wanted to wish you and Alan a Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
And to let you know on my 97 F-250 with the modular you guys put in, this truck running like a scalded dog. I couldn't be happier on setting number one, which is the stock mode. I get great fuel economy, and I haven't towed in the extreme mode because I'm too scared I'm going to break something.
No, don't, please don't. So how many modes you got? Five?
It's five or six.
Okay. I don't want you towing in four and five.
No.
Okay. You can run four and five with nothing on the hitch, but don't run four and five when you're towing anything. I don't care if it's a little 4x6 utility trailer. You stay one, two, and three, and you leave four and five for the when the 18-year-old kid comes out in you.
There you go.
Okay.
And that's occasional. I think this has six settings, and I'm towing in the plus 75 horsepower mode, and I'm happy with that. I'm not going uphill 70 miles an hour, but I'm getting it up the hill, and my EGT is, you know, reasonable.
Well, what's reasonable? Is it 9 to 11?
Yes.
Okay, good, good. I needed to hear that. This isn't that 550 you're talking about, right?
No, this is my white. It's a white 97 F250 extended cab, long bed, four wheel drive, white that Alan's had in the shop a couple of times.
Okay.
For me.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I've notated on the tape here that Alan will pick it up at about 119, and I'll play that for him on Monday because he left. His son's birthday's today, and I'm on my way out of the station. But thank you very much, Steve, for saying that. Folks, what Steve's talking about is he has a diesel, and they make a something that you can place on the dashboard, and you can on the fly change the power settings. And he has five or six settings, and we don't want him to tow in the two real radical settings, but it's a computerized device that enhances the performance of the engine, if that's what you call it about. So thank you very much for that, Steve. Action Auto Repair is located at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom, who owns Action Auto Repair, is a good guy. I've known him since 1983. He's exactly the kind of guy you hope would marry your daughter. That's the finest compliment I can pay somebody. And most of the shops in my list are run by guys like that. But Tom is the nice guy. He knows honesty, he knows integrity, and he's not going to allow his technicians or any of his staff to play games with your car. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Deer Valley, if you don't already have a repair shop, or maybe you want to compare your repair shop to another shop, then may I suggest you stop by Action Auto Repair. He's on the northwest corner, Deer Valley, and I-17. And he has ASE Master Certified Technician, which virtually ensures that they're going to get the job done right. So nevertheless, Gil, we got anybody else
on? It's all clear.
It's all clear. Gil says it's all clear. We're approaching the end of the show, and I want to wish all of you a very Merry Christmas. Family, of course, as I'm sure you would imagine, is everything to all of us. And so it's important for us to remember the reason for the season. And I don't know about you, but giving is an important part of what we do. We had an employee luncheon yesterday, and I got to sit in the corner and watch all that happen. And I got to see big, huge smiles on all of our employees' faces and stuff. And it was an important day for me. So if you are having trouble finding somebody to give to, there was a nifty article in the paper this morning about the police department, and someone had given them some money, and they identified some families that could use some help. May I suggest that you do something like that? If you're unsure, the Humane Society is another great place to donate money to. There's lots of animals. There was another article in today's paper about the Humane Society and some of the trials and tribulations they have. And obviously, there's good and there's bad with the Humane Society. Unfortunately, because of cost and everything else, they have to put some dogs down. But all in all, there's a heck of a lot of dogs that leave the Humane Society that end up in really good homes and have really good lives. And Mark and Renee Salem have one of those ourselves. So the Humane Society is also a good place and a good feeling place for you to donate money to. And like many of these facilities, you have to just go to the Better Business Bureau website to find out and make sure your charity, that, you know, it's unfortunate, but there's charities out there where 90% of it goes towards costs and 10% goes towards the charity. That's kind of a difficult thing for Mark Salem to swallow. I would prefer that it be a nonprofit, and I understand there's going to be some expenses associated with a charity, but I want a lot of the money that I donate to go specifically towards the families and the kids and the stuff like that. One other place that you can donate that's one of my favorites, it's called CASA. That's Court Appointed Special Advocates. And the CASA program puts a trained person in the legal system along with the child. And the trained person is actually the eyes and the ears of the judge. So the trained person has solely the child's best interest at heart. When there is a child involved in a dispute, there's usually mom and dad and a social worker and lawyers and stuff, and everybody may or may not have their own agenda. But the CASA worker themselves has no agenda. Their agenda is what's the best for the child. And I'm a former CASA guy, and I was CASA to three young men. And during that period of time, it was very rewarding. So as you get older and you have more time on your hands, and you can pass a very strenuous background examination, then I can also suggest to you that you perhaps get a hold of the local CASA office and ask them if you can start the process to become a CASA, and ultimately you'll be assigned to a young man or a young woman who's under the age of 18, and your job will be to monitor them and to, like I said, be the eyes and the ears of the judge. So the judge will listen to all the parties associated with what happens to this child, but you're going to be one of those pair of eyes the judge will listen to, and everybody recognizes that the difference between you and everybody else is that you're looking out after the kid instead of your own agenda. And of course, you can draw whatever conclusion you want for that, but that's what happens. On a happier note, there's a tire shop in Westside that does a good job, S&S Tires. They've got three locations to serve you there in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. The two boys just lost their father, but they're running a great shop, and they're both well experienced in the great shop, and they both have your interests in front of their own. So when it comes to S&S Tire, first of all, they have a very comprehensive line of tires, and they have many different brands and just about any size. So when you look in their warehouses, they have farm equipment, golf equipment, lawn and garden equipment, ATVs, trailers, commercial tires, construction tires, as well as tires for your car and your truck in your garage. Not only do they have tires for the car and truck in your garage, but they have many different brands, which costs many different prices. So you can stop by S&S Tire and you can say to them, my car's outside. I would like you to give me an out-the-door price for four top-line tires, four middle-line tires, and four bottom-line tires, and they're happy to do that for you. That way you can determine what's best for you. And out-the-door prices means they're going to tell you everything. So the out-the-door price is write your check before you leave home, because this is all it's going to cost. I have four tires, the FET charges on each one of those. I have all the environmental charges. I have all the waste tire charges. I have all the sales tax. I have all the mounting and balancing. I have the new stems. I have all of that in there. And that's what's important when you buy tires, because anybody can tell you that I've got tires for your car for $200, but when you get there, all of a sudden it turns to $400 because I'd only quoted you the tires and all the other stuff is extra. So S&S Tire won't do that. Those guys have more integrity than that. So if you're on the West Side, S&S Tire and Auto Service, they also do maintenance, basic maintenance. They do alignment, suspension work, and they'll also guide you to a good shop in your general area if the work that you need done is not within their area of expertise. So until then, Merry Christmas to you and your family. May God bless all of you. I hope that you have a nice nice Christmas and Christmas Eve, and I'll see you next Saturday here on KKNT. My name is Mark Salem. God bless you. We'll see you next week.